This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. The alternative weekly, once on the fringes of American journalism, is now an institution in itself. Its staples are long-form investigative journalism, close coverage of the cultural avant-garde, watchdogging of the local mainstream media, and sharp, usually left-leaning commentary. The granddaddy of alt weeklies is The Village Voice, which for more than 50 years has proffered its downtown view of New York and the world. But last November, The Voice was acquired by the New Times chain of alt weeklies. The Village Voice is used to turmoil, but as Bob reports, this particular turmoil has raised questions about the sanctity of a cultural landmark and the future of alternative journalism itself.
In the space of 4 months, the Village Voice saw the departure of its publisher, two editors-in-chief, its storied Washington muckraker, and its Pulitzer Prize-winning media critic. Sidney Shanberg quit after a confrontational meeting with the new boss. Investigative reporter James Ridgway was terminated for reasons still unclear. Nat Hentoff, who has been covering civil liberties for The Voice for 49 years, was targeted for criticism in front of the entire staff, all of which drama leaves the survivors and many others to wonder, when the shakeup of this venerable institution ends, who among the villagers will still have a voice? Who, that is, other than Michael Lacey, the new chief?
You know, if there was any question about whether or not he was going to walk on eggshells with The Voice culture, that was answered very quickly. He just went in there and smashed all the eggs.
Mark Jerkowitz, media critic for the Boston Phoenix, says Lacey's tough guy approach has been sad and ugly to witness.
Frankly, when you have people like Nat Hentoff, who's about 80, and Sidney Shanberg, who's in his 70s, men who helped define journalism for a generation or two, I don't find it particularly appealing that you would go out of your way to pick fights with folks like that.
One of the last things he said at the meeting itself was, be prepared to say goodbye to some of your friends.
Sidney Shanberg.
And there was no real need for that kind of gratuitous hostility or insult. And I didn't think it was an accident. I thought that was part of the man, and I didn't want to work for him.
Shanberg looked at the new boss of the Village Voice and saw a self-satisfied bully. Jerkowitz looks and sees a talented journalist and businessman who, for reasons best known to himself, wanted to serve notice there was a new sheriff in town. Not the new sheriff in Phoenix, however, or Nashville, or any of the other dozen cities where Lacey has successfully run alt weeklies. The new sheriff in New York City, Greenwich Village, where the likes of Norman Mailer and Allen Ginsberg, Andrew Saris, and Jules Pfeiffer invented the American alternative press. Never mind sheriff. It's as if Lacey and his partners were the Taliban, dynamiting journalism's Buddhas of Bamiyan.
Calmness with original voices, kinds of writing that wouldn't exist except in those pages, voices you want to hear and can't find anywhere else.
R.J. Smith, formerly of The Voice and the L.A. Weekly, and now senior editor at Los Angeles Magazine, himself views his old rag with a certain awe and reverence. And he, too, has his doubts about the New Times fundamentalists, whom he believes are just itching to teach the highbrow New Yorkers a lesson. But he's quick to add that Lacey and company may well have a few good lessons to teach, because over the past 25 years, The Voice has taken on a certain pallor of decrepitude, an aged bohemian shuffling down Houston Street in faded India print and tattered leftist dogma. The New Times papers, meanwhile, are feisty and vital and fun.
And that's much to their credit. They like entertaining readers. And in my opinion, in the pages of The Village Voice, sometimes these days, they can be too intellectual.
And if not too intellectual, says media writer David Carr of The New York Times, certainly too predictable.
You don't have to read much beyond the headline to know that the boot heel of the man is going to end up on the lowly little guy in one shape or another.
And from predictability, it is but one tiny step to self-parody. Perhaps that's what Lacey sensed about his new property. What we know he sensed, because he hasn't shut up about it, is that the staff was too busy opining to gather actual news.
Well, I thought that the paper had had gotten lazy, frankly.
Michael Lacy.
There was a lot of sort of attitudinizing, and that was the sort of thing that I objected to. I thought that we ought to be breaking stories rather than pointing people to other good stories that other journalists had done.
Cud-chewing, Lacy believes, is fine for blogs, but not a city weekly, which should be on the streets digging up tales of vice and corruption. Now, journalists can scarcely argue against conducting journalism. Yet they also can't be blamed for fretting over the soul of the Village Voice. If Rupert Murdoch, who owned the paper for 8 years, could refrain from interfering with content, they wonder why Mike Lacy is so hell-bent on change. For instance, his fixation on eliminating references to other news organizations in Voice pieces. In his notorious first meeting with the staff, Lacy's blast was directed at Nat Hentoff, but other Buddhas shuddered too. Sidney Shanberg.
I thought to myself in the meeting that how could you possibly write a press criticism column if you didn't write about other people's work? So I asked him that. I said, how can one get around this edict that you've made? And he said, never mind. Did you hear what I said in there?
I said, you need to pick up the phone and interview people. I want you to do fundamental reporting and not simply riffing about what had occurred to you that day. And apparently that was too much to expect.
What the new owners can expect from their acquisition is not apparent at all. The Voice remains profitable, but like other alternative weeklies, it faces all the problems of the mainstream press and then some. For instance, its listings and opinion columns have ever-increasing competition on websites and blogs. The New York Times' David Carr.
That presents an editorial problem and a business problem. And you've got Craigslist sort of eating away at the classifieds in the back, which is the bedrock that all of these papers are built on.
Then there's the question of the readership, or alleged readership, of 260,000. Because, as R.J. Smith observes,
what's a reader? A guy standing in a movie theater line who picks up a weekly off the stack to get a time of the movie at the multiplex, and then when the line moves, they throw it back down? Sad to say, that's half the alternative weekly readers these days.
Maybe this is no time to be fiddling with the editorial product and instead figuring out how to reach its core audience in the digital age. Maybe, as Lacy insists, the doomsayers are wrong and a remade Village Voice will thrive for a long time to come. Or maybe he's feeling more squeezed than he admits and thinks desperate times demand desperate measures. Sometimes it's hard to tell the voice of doom from the voice of conscience from the voice of reason. And as 5 decades of turmoil at the Village Voice more or less bear out, it's even harder to find the right alternative.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.